the sort we find in the Greek tragedies. But this is not the only kind of beauty that we find in the arts. A play of Shakespeare does not have this beauty, at any rate not to the extent that some of his sonnets have. Often the director of a Shakespeare play chooses to leave out whole speeches. In the Olivier film version of Hamlet, Hamlet never says, "Oh, what a rogue and peasant slave am I." And yet the performance works, because Shakespeare's plays are not spare, perfect structures like General Relativity or Oedipus Rex. They are big, messy compositions whose messiness mirrors the complexity of life. This is part of the beauty of his plays, a beauty that, to my taste, is of a higher order than the beauty of a play of Sophocles, or the beauty of General Relativity, for that matter. Some of the greatest moments in Shakespeare are those in which he deliberately abandons the model of Greek tragedy and introduces an extraneous comic proletarian, a doorkeeper, or gardener, or fig-seller, or gravedigger, just before his major characters encounter their fates. Certainly the beauty of theoretical physics would be a very bad exemplar for the arts, but such as it is, it gives us pleasure and guidance. There is another respect in which it seems to me that theoretical physics is a bad model for the arts. Our theories are very esoteric, necessarily so, because we are forced to develop these theories using a language, the language of mathematics, that has not become part of the general equipment of the educated public. Physicists generally do not like the fact that our theories are so esoteric. On the other hand, I have occasionally heard artists talk proudly about their work being accessible only to a band of cognoscenti, and justify this attitude by quoting the example of physical theories, like general relativity, that also can be understood only by initiates. Artists, like physicists, may not always be able to make themselves understood by the general public, but esotericism, for its own sake, is just silly. Although we seek theories that are beautiful because of a rigidity imposed on them by simple underlying principles, creating a theory is not simply a matter of deducing it mathematically from a set of preordained principles. Our principles are often invented as we go along, sometimes precisely because they lead to the kind of rigidity we hope for. I have no doubt that one of the reasons that Einstein was so pleased with his idea about the equivalence of gravitation and inertia was that this principle led to only one fairly rigid theory of gravitation, and not to an infinite variety of possible theories of gravitation. Deducing the consequences of a given set of well-formulated physical principles can be difficult or easy, but it is the sort of thing that physicists learn to do in graduate school, and that they generally enjoy doing. The creation of new physical principles is agony, and apparently cannot be taught.